to Radio Zine. My name is Dresden, and co-hosting with me is the lovely Jenna. How are you, Jenna?
Doing good. How are you doing, Dresden?
Sweet, sweet. I'm excited because on today's show, we're going to be talking to Richard Pope, the founder and executive director of the People's Colloquium. The People's Colloquium is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide free education in the arts and humanities. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Thanks for having me with you today.
I'm glad you're here. I would like to start by asking you to explain a little bit about how your program works.
Sure. So the People's Colloquium offers a variety of weekly events. Mondays, we have a philosophy and ideas discussion at 5:30, a lecture at 7:30. Tuesdays, our focus is creative writing. At 5:30, we have a free creative writing class. At 7 o'clock, we have creative writing critique groups. And at 8:30, we have open mics, featured readers, or socials for the writers. Thursdays, we have several different what we think of deep delve seminars where we explore a text or a series of texts under the guidance of a facilitator. There's a way to think about our offerings in terms of a diversity and of discussions and lectures and critique groups across philosophy, ideas, creative writing.
Awesome, awesome. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're offering collegiate level education. I was actually involved in your subset, the People's Inc., which was a creative writing workshop. And at the time I was involved, there was about 60 people strong that was attending this program. What are the numbers right now? How many people are involved in the program?
Well, we typically have between 90 and 120 attendances.
Beautiful.
A week.
Beautiful. That is a strong, influential community. Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the philosophical conversation style that is the other offering of the People's Colloquium, but it does sound like it is a lecture class, something similar to what you would experience in college. Is that correct?
There is a comparison to be made, absolutely.
Beautiful, awesome. So I know that you prioritize the arts and humanities to delve into and provide that to the surrounding people. Why the arts and humanities? Why not physics? Why not artificial intelligence? Why did you choose those two?
Well, there's a variety of reasons. One is something that I personally love, and a lot of people who are involved in the colloquium are very much in love with as well. Two, I would say a need in the community, the greater community of Portland. I think for this, it gets into what universities are doing and what they're not doing today, and sort of the economics around universities and how that might be changing given our sort of evolving national or economic situation. And so I think this question gets into, is there a space that the universities might be leaving open for people to come together and discuss these things outside of that context? And I think the answer is there is this growing space there.
Sure. You've actually gone so far to say, as you mentioned just now, that there's a need in communities for the arts and humanities. How is the community lacking when we're not educated in the arts and humanities?
Well, I like to think of the arts and humanities as kind of getting to the very soul of what it means to be a human being, this exploration of what it means to be alive, what it means to express oneself, how that expression reflects onto who we are as individuals, who we are as a society. Mm-hmm. So I think the exploration of these things is intimately wrapped up with who we are.
Got it. And as a consequence of not having that readily available in our society, do you feel that a lot of people are going through life not asking these important questions and as such getting stuck in routines that people are unhappy with?
I think that's a potential risk for all of us, that we get stuck in routines or we lose sight of the more important questions of what it means to be alive, what it means to be human, what it means to be on planet Earth. And so providing the opportunities for people to come together and explore these questions, I think, is absolutely essential for us as a collective, as a species, to be honest.
Beautiful.
You know, Rich, as someone, I've never taken any courses or anything through People's Colloquium. So could you describe for me what it would be like for me to go to a class or these large classes? Who's teaching these courses? Because I'm like, wow, I would love to be able to take some kind of, you know, course that you're talking about. Like, I don't always get chances to ride, and sometimes I wish that I could be taking courses. And so this sounds like a great opportunity for people who don't necessarily want to go to traditional school, mm-hmm. but want that opportunity to continue, I don't know, learning or maybe getting finally starting to write.
So we offer a variety of different formats, and there's different ways to participate, and it's open to individuals how they want to participate, what's most valuable to them. Generally, we have these several formats: discussions, critique groups, open mics, and these reading seminars. So the teachers or the facilitators that we look for, my ideal faculty, if you will, would be composed of about 50% trained academics and 50% lay folk who are just knowledgeable and passionate about subjects in the arts and humanities. And true enough, our faculty and our facilitators, our teachers, pretty much follow that 50-50 split.
And then if I'm a student wanting to come to you, do I need to have a background in arts and humanities, or can I come a novice to the table?
Yeah, absolutely. As a novice, all are welcome. It's very inclusive. We believe that, first off, everyone, I think, has some intuition, some insight into the subject matters that the arts and humanities explores. And so I think a pure novice would be almost like a mythical creature, actually, something hard to find. It's very much, there's very much a sense of an egalitarian, equal kind of contribution, learning from each other. Even someone who comes in may have some kind of PhD or something in, let's say, philosophy or some aspect of the humanities. Even that individual with a more expansive formal education, I believe, and this is the attitude we encourage, has something to learn from someone who is never cracked open, like, say, a collection of Shakespeare's work or something like that. Because what are we dealing with? It's the questions of, again, what it means to be human, how do we express ourselves. So,
cool. So you mentioned earlier that there is a inherent problem in the current college format in how arts and humanities are being given to the people. What is the colloquium attempting to change about the college format?
I would say actually the problem is what colleges are not doing and what they're not able to do based upon what I think of as the economic constraints. So college programs in the arts and humanities are known to be becoming more and more expensive. You know, what might have been, you know, a degree you could earn with several thousand dollars, you know, say several decades ago, is now going to cost several tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
There is this concern, I think is a nationwide concern, of growing student loan debt. And attached to that is a concern about how prepared graduates in the arts and humanities are for our current economic environment. You know, what sort of jobs are available? Are folks going to be hired for a job if, say, they have they've received an intensive education on Shakespeare? I'll just keep using Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a mismatch there. So not only is there a mismatch between what people are studying in college, there's a mismatch between how much people are paying for this education.
Sure.
And what sort of return on investment they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate what the universities do and what they've done in the past, but I think the question is, can they continue to sort of bear the torch of all of these traditions that basically are constituted in the arts and humanities? Can they continue to bear that torch into the future? I think that question's in doubt. I think maybe, likely, there's this space here where other institutions, other visions can arise to, you know, take that torch and pass it into the future.
Right, such as the mm-hmm. People's Colloquium.
Exactly.
And so you mentioned how the collegiate program could be tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to get an education in these mm-hmm. fields. The People's Colloquium provides it for free.
Absolutely.
And I think that if the People's Colloquium were to charge a small membership fee, an accessible membership fee, a lot of people would be willing to pay it as an alternative to paying tens of thousands of dollars. So why not charge a small membership fee?
So the belief and the intention is to make this as inclusive as possible. And membership fees are, by their very nature, exclusive. They're going to prevent people from attending. So we've landed on basically just like an optional donor system. People can give as much as they want or nothing at all, depending on what suits them and their particular economic situation.
Mm-hmm. Not only are people donating resources to keep this vision going of free education in the arts and humanities, but also people are devoting a lot of their time and taking on managerial roles within the People's Colloquium, because as I understand it, there is a cooperative government which leads the program. And although you're the original founder of the People's Colloquium and you could have chosen to keep the power for yourself, you've instead decided on this equitable team of people to run the program. Why make that decision?
Well, the truth is that the People's Colloquium, from its very get-go, and I think this is the nature of community in any organization, depends upon the people who are involved. And so even had I created the People's Colloquium to be a private business or something like that, I would still have to do the exact same work, which is check in with people. What do they need? What do they want? Mm-hmm. How can we adapt our offerings to meet those needs and wants? I think the truth is that any one of us is limited with our time, our abilities, mm-hmm. even our very visions that might guide us in this world. And so we rely upon each other to a great degree, I think, with everything that we do. So yeah, I think the very nature actually of communities and programs and institutions is such that it should be a collective endeavor. But yeah, not only that, I want to empower people to sort of make the decisions they need to in order to find what they're looking for, right? So it's not a matter of, you know, you'll get this at colleges or universities, you'll enter into a program and it'll be standardized and everyone will kind of like, you know, maybe the same sort of stuff and go through the same sort of courses. And I think the truth is there's so much out there to learn. You basically want to empower people to learn what they're passionate about, what they love. Mm-hmm. So I think, does that answer all your questions?
Yeah, sure. Okay. You mentioned also how there's so much out there to learn. Are there any plans for the People's Colloquium to expand beyond the arts and humanities? Is there a need, or is the focus on those two fields enough?
There's certainly a need, and I think there are other institutions out there that are doing some really good work, say, for instance, in programming. Mm-hmm. Communities that are dedicated to different programming languages that get people together and learn together and create projects together and these sorts of things. For us, arts and humanities is really our focus, and even within that category, I would say a focus on ideas, reflection, thinking, writing, speaking. You know, these are the actions that we want to encourage folks to undertake.
Sure. And
so our focus with our programs are on, again, ideas, creative writing, speaking, et cetera.
Sure. And people who partake in the program, they have, a lot of them experience exponential growth. I know that Taylor Zajonc, he has a published novel that he attributes to his workshops through the People's Inc., which was a subsect of the People's Colloquium. And you mentioned earlier that other institutions are providing free programming classes, for example. I had always imagined that the People's Colloquium was doing something unique, but now that other institutions are on my radar, it does seem like there is this thread, this recurring thread of different communities and making education more accessible. Did you take your cue from these other organizations, or did you find this project on your own?
So you're absolutely right. I believe that the People's Colloquium is just part of a larger cultural movement toward community, do-it-yourself, free information that the internet makes possible, community, new generations of community organizing that I think potentially might be possible due to the way that our cities are evolving, kind of centralizing. So I believe we're part of this greater wave of cultural movement, and education is even just a small part of it. So I think the answer is that we're all learning from each other, everyone who's in this space. And yeah, we're observing what other people are doing and learning and borrowing. And I don't think there's any one individual or one institution that is, you know, setting, you know, the example for the rest to follow. The truth is that we're all moving into this space together, exploring it, looking at the possibilities.
As a community should be, I totally agree. So, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Radio Zion here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking with the founder of the People's Colloquium, a nonprofit whose mission is to provide free education in the arts and humanities.
I have a question. You're just talking about DIY and how you're able to, you know, offer all these courses for no cost. Well, we live in a society where things do have to be paid for. And I know you said that people can either opt to donate or not. And so I was just sort of wondering, is that your sole source of funding? Is just people's decision to donate money? Is there other sources? Are you being sponsored by other people? How does funding work for you guys?
So we have several sources of funding, though the truth is we're always looking for more so we can pay our teachers more and offer more classes. But we get grants. We have a Patreon where people can make monthly reoccurring donations. And then we always have a donation box out at all of our events for people to donate to. So all that together basically adds up for our funding.
I understand, too, that you yourself invested a lot of your own funds to see this come to fruition. And for you to continue to provide this service for free, I think is very commendable. The next question I want to ask is, there's this recurring theme of this sense of community, and I believe that Portland itself as a city has a really great sense of community, and I'm wondering, was there anything special about the Portland community that was conducive to the colloquium's success?
I believe so. I think Portland has this amazing history as a sort of a mecca for the arts, and I think that was in sort of the DNA of our city. So true to that, there are similar organizations to the People's Colloquium, and, you know, sprouting up, I think, all over the place, and I think that says something about the city and its culture and its people. But I think perhaps you could find something similar in other cities around the world, even.
Sure.
Though what that would look like on per location, that I'm not entirely sure.
Sure. So another thing I want to ask is that I do think that Portland, you mentioned the mecca for the arts and humanities, for the fields that you're wanting to share through the colloquium. If this were to be recreated in another city like Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York, what kind of hardships would be unique to those cities, and what kind of advice would you have for people wanting to recreate your success?
In some ways, I think even cities like LA or San Francisco and, you know, comparing it to Portland, I think are facing some similar issues, which is the rising cost of living, rising cost in rent. You know, there's just so many, it seems like a lot of folks, you know, have these increased expenses when it mm-hmm. comes to living in these sort of postmodern metropolises. Mm-hmm. I think that's the greatest challenge we all face with running these programs. Is the truth is, as Jenna mentioned, we live in this capitalist society that to a large degree runs on just money, and seems like these days more and more money.
Sure.
And so carving out a space to provide offerings on no budget or low budget, you know, is a challenge. For instance, how do you pay folks? How do you get venues, right,
yeah,
to host you? And it can be a trick. It can take, it can be an art, a juggling act. That, I think, is the greatest challenge. And it's one that seems to be building. But I think then it also shows the importance of this kind of work. The importance of this kind of work.
Beautiful. I think offering an alternative to what our society tends towards, capitalist solutions, what you're offering with this free program, how difficult was it to get the program to where the funding was sustainable?
Well, the question is, how sustainable is it?
Yes.
I can tell you we have, you know, a year, maybe a couple years of funding. But after that, you know, the challenge will recreate itself. And how, you know, one of my goals as the executive director is to get and we have some incredible people who are volunteering their time or who are working for, you know, less money than I would wish. So one of my challenges as executive director is to find more money so I can pay folks what they deserve.
Sure. Beautiful.
So what kind of milestones do you have planned for the colloquium?
It's an organic process, honestly. So I think one important aspect of what we do is we experiment, we try new things. And I think we need to keep doing that, trying new things in this space, new different kinds of offerings, new leadership, new vision. So I think, so when it comes to milestones, it should be mentioned that's an organic process.
Sure.
I think, you know, generally speaking, the question is, you know, how effective can we be in this space? How many offerings can we provide? How can we make these offerings as successful as possible for people? How can we make sure people are walking away with what they're looking for, that there's real growth there, that people are reaching their milestones, I think, sure. are really our milestones.
Beautiful. And so what does the timeline look like? Because I know that the People's Colloquium has really progressed in since the time that I've started being involved with what started out as the People's Inc., and it was 60 strong, and now it's 120 strong. It does seem that this timeline is exponential. Could you describe the timeline a little bit about what kind of success the program has been receiving and what kind of milestones have already been hit?
Well, we started in a pretty humble place. It was just a writer's critique group advertised through Craigslist, which was kind
that's
of
how I found you.
That was the place people looked 7-8 years ago for groups like this. And you know, it's just taken on kind of its own life, its own vision, depending on what people are bringing to it, what people want to get out of it. New things, you know, are, you know, crop up that way. So, it's evolved from, you know, writers' critique groups to then discussion groups and then, you know, classes. And then we've, you know, now we're pretty big into philosophy and ideas and open mics and these sorts of things.
Sure. So in an ideal world, with the exponential growth in mind and with fingers crossed that it stays that way, what kind of revolutionary change do you hope the People's Colloquium ultimately manifests into?
Well, just to be part of that wave of change that's filling this opening, I think, in the educational environment, that's what I hope we can participate and contribute to. I would love to see us evolve in a way that, you know, we're meeting people's goals more fully. I would love to see us evolve in a way that we have stronger connections with other organizations in town, stronger communication with other organizations in town, that we can complement each other and grow maybe into new places together.
Beautiful. And I think what's special about your project is that there's this removal of ego. The fact that you're wanting to be part of this larger web, the fact that you're delegating authority to other people rather than holding it by yourself. How important is that removal of ego for the success of the People's Colloquium?
Well, I think the removal of ego is essential to the success of the whole human species. I don't think we have much more time to have much of an ego. We have, you know, many great problems facing us. And so here it is, the removal of ego. I like to hope on the sort of humble level of growing, you know, grassroots community-based educational system. But I hope this is just simply a small expression of a much greater removal of ego, if you will, that's happening on a society or even global level.
Very important sentiment. Last thing, anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I guess I would just invite folks who are listening to come check out the People's Colloquium if they're interested. Again, we meet Monday nights for philosophy and ideas, Tuesdays for creative writing, Thursdays for more philosophy and ideas, and we're always growing. People can check out our website, peoplescolloquium.org. People can also, if they feel so inclined and would like to make regular donations to help us grow and help us realize our vision, they can go to patreon.com/thepeoplescolloquium. And get involved any way they like, whether as a donor, especially as a participant. We're always looking for more teachers, looking for people who want to join this and fill this space and offer new education.
Awesome. Much love to the People's Colloquium. Jenna, do you have any closing questions?
Yeah, where are these classes?
Oh, that's a great question. So most of our classes are located on the Inner East Side of Portland. We chose that because it's accessible and it's centralized for the greater Portland area. Also, parking isn't so bad yet, as opposed to, say, downtown, where you have to pay for parking. We have several different venues that we've partnered with. Portland Roasting Coffees, Oak Street Cafe, The Slide Inn, and Rendezvous off Belmont are current locations, but we've worked in several others in the past.
Nice variety of places.
Yeah.
And are you partnering with these locations? Is it just you renting the spaces, or do you have collaborations with these organizations or companies?
So we don't actually rent locations. We don't have the budget for it. What we do is we look for venues that can host us, oftentimes in exchange for food and drink sales or patronage for their businesses. I should mention that we don't mandate our attendees to purchase food and drink, but if they like to, then they can buy themselves dinner and also help make our venues affordable.
Beautiful. So we're all out of time for today's show. I want to thank our guest, Richard Pope, for coming in and talking about the People's Colloquium. To learn more about the organization and to get involved, please visit the website at peoplescolloquium.org. For Radio Zine and KBOO Community Radio, I'm Dresden with my co-host, Jenna. Thanks for listening in.